John Harbaugh, 18 years in Baltimore, 180 regular season wins, 13 playoff victories, a Super Bowl championship, but only three playoff wins with Lamar Jackson. So what is his legacy here in Baltimore?
I think it's two legacies in one. And I found myself wondering recently, if Andy Reid had chosen anywhere to go other than Kansas City and ends up with Patrick Mahomes, like, are we talking about Harbs maybe somewhat like we're talking about Andy Reid now? Because, like, first sort of, whatever I would say, first career Harbs or first stint Harbs.
First act.
He had the secret sauce to go to Foxborough and win, and nobody was going to Foxborough and win it. He was the little engine that could. You put Harbs with whomever as a road dog in the playoffs, he's going to not just cover, he's probably going to win you outright. And he was doing things that were historically significant in terms of road wins as a young head coach. And again, wins at places where nobody else was winning. And then they switch over to the Lamar thing, which basically dovetails with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And he could not. The Arrowhead becomes the new Foxborough, and that's a house of horrors for him. And not only that, he goes from a guy who got some quality wins against Pittsburgh early to a guy who's finding ways not to beat Pittsburgh. And then obviously the last couple of years, and even some of this was during McDonald, they start losing games at home that they're not supposed to lose. You're starting to lose games as a home favorite with Lamar. And then you start losing games at home with Lamar as a big favorite in prime time. And I think as much as the first iteration from like being hired to winning the Super Bowl was about being uber clutch, saving your best for last, like having that way to create that break for yourself when somebody's going to win the game based on a break, and it might not be the team with the best roster or in many cases even the best quarterback, it went to the opposite, finding ways to come up small in the clutch, not being able to get past the big new bully in the block. And then for it to end this year where that bully didn't exist for the first time in forever and they still kicked the crap out of you and had guys, I think, pulling the chute a little bit in that one and waving their hand and I'm sub me off next, boss. And for it to have tumbled like this, there's sort of some weird symmetry there.
It's definitely a little tricky. And I think you nailed all of that, Jason, where it's kind of
two and one.
Two and one. Yes. But I think the further removed we get from this firing, the better people will look back on John Harbaugh. And I look, they're lunatic fringe. We always joke about that. But you see people like doing backflips over the fact that this guy got fired. And oh, my gosh, it's so amazing. Or parading. It's like, come on, dude. Like, this guy was here for 18 years. Mm-hmm. They had the third most total playoff wins in that span since 2008. They had the third most playoff berths. They won more than a heck of a lot more than they didn't. I think I look back on it differently because the first game, Flacco's rookie year, which obviously John's rookie year, I remember being there with my dad. I hadn't even turned 13 yet.
Mm-hmm. I was
12 a month before turning 13. And you think of all of those wins and you think of it culminating with that Super Bowl. Did it end poorly? Did it end on a sour note? Did it end with not taking advantage of a generational talent at the quarterback position? Absolutely. But I think I choose to look back and will choose to look back on Harbaugh's legacy in Baltimore with fondness.
Oh, definitely.
Because, like, 18 years, man. Like, well, that does not
take it a step further.
Sports.
So you're looking at it through your lifetime. So yeah, I'm 52.
Yeah,
so, let me take it back to my deceased grandfather. He used to talk to me about the Colts with Weeb Eubank and Don Shula.
Yeah.
He's going to go down as the second greatest coach in Baltimore. Take Ravens out of it.
Sure.
Baltimore football history, which now we're going back 100 years. Right, it's going to be Don Shula. It's going to be Harbaugh. It's going to be, sorry, Billick. It's going to be like Weeb, and then maybe Billick. But I mean,
well, Billick won the Super Bowl, so he's got to be in the conversation.
But like, I don't think Bill's not a better coach than Harbaugh.
No.
Billick
no
left
chance.
Here and got one interview with Philadelphia when they were in a bind. This guy's going to interview with any team he wants to interview on his time.
Billick won one playoff game other than the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl year. He won one. They beat Miami the next year.
And it's Don Shula. Yeah. It's Harbaugh. Not a lot of cities can say that.
How about this? Harbaugh in his first 5 years, not only did he win a playoff game every year, he went to three AFC title games.
Yeah.
Like, he went to three AFC title games. That's insanity.
And Jason, you mentioned the road. 8 road playoff wins is the most in NFL history. The most road playoff wins in NFL history.
Now, again, there were like 3 total playoff games for a long period of time. And 2 total playoff games for a while.
And when Steve used to talk, he would lament that fact, saying, hey, we want to be playing at home in January, not on the road. But I tweeted this out, and I said, like, if you would have told Steve Bisciotti, John Harbaugh, this fan base in 2008, January, when you're about to hire this guy, hey, you're going to be here for 18 years. You're going to win all these games. You're going to win a Super Bowl. But you're going to be here for 18 years? Everyone would have signed up for that. Well, so, and that's the point. And this was, I don't want to say a nobody. It's disrespectful to him. But this was an unknown commodity.
He wasn't an it guy. He wasn't the hot commodity.
This was an unknown commodity. And he even made fun of that in his statement. Yeah, it took a chance on a special teams coach. And he's going to end up in Canton one day.
And if you would have told his coaching mentor, Andy Reid, when he left Philadelphia, right down the road from here, after having a full career there, that you're going to go to Kansas City and be remembered as the guy who won all the Super Bowls, not the guy who lost a bunch of NFC championship games, he would have been like, I don't know about that. And that's what happened.
And one more stat, by the way. He's 14th all-time in head coaching wins.
Oh, yeah.
14th?
Yeah.
Like, so
it's 18 years.
Yeah. And when you're talking about the history of the NFL going back over 100 years, he's 14th. So I would say the higher worked out.
He's going to Canton.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I also will always appreciate him getting into his brother's head Super Bowl week, which was good. Like,
yeah,
all
how about, I mean, that'll never make sense about that. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, like, he got into his head. It was awesome that whole week. Alas, coming up next, time for some bounce back, fall back, bone answer some questions we answer next here on the show.
Well, let's look back to Sunday. Aaron Rodgers passes for over 210 and a half yards.
He blew almost by 310, that. Bone.
294. Jason, you bounced back. You said 216. Ken, you fell back. Yeah. Said 199.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry rushes for over 92 and a half yards. Both you guys bounced back. Jason, you were this close, man. You were this close. You said 127. You ran for 126.
Oh.
It's no Jimmy Butler.
Well, Ken nailed Jimmy Butler, yeah, right. So of course it's not Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, and that was between like 1 and 22 points. And this is
I think it was in the 30s.
1 and
127. Correctly. I think it was like 36.
I was close
with
Henry.
1 and
Patriots
127,
game.
Or had I been right, 126. Strikes me as a larger span, but I could be wrong.
Derrick Henry scored 4 touchdowns against the Packers. He scores 2 or more touchdowns against the Steelers. He did not.
Only thing I got
Pater.
Wrong about this game, I want to bet.
0. Jason, you bounced back. You had 2 rushing. Ken, you fell back. You said 1 touchdown, but you still get the point.
Oh, thank you.
Jalen Warren rushes for over 45 and a half yards. He did. He had 66. Ken, you bounced back. Jason, you fell back. Mm. You said Gainwell outrushes Warren. Gainwell only had 10 yards rushing. Kenneth Gainwell has over 4.5 receptions. Boy, did he.
I know where I was on this.
He had 8. Yeah. Jason, you bounced back. You said 7 catches or more. Back hit.
Ken, and that got you good plus money.
Pat Freiermuth has over 3.5 receptions. Hit 3. Both you guys fell back. Ravens did not have a sack and had only 1 quarterback hit against Rodgers in the first game. They have 2 or more sacks. They did.
Yeah.
The one by Tavius for no game was rolled a sack.
Yes.
So they did have 2 sacks. Can you bounce back? Jason, he fell back. He thought 1 sack.
I was basically right.
Ravens win the turnover battle. They did not. They lost 1-0. Jason, you fell back. Can you bounce back? Ken with a narrow win. 6-5. 6-5. Let's start with tonight. Maryland. The spread yesterday was 8.5. It's come down a point.
Huh.
Ken, Maryland covers the 7.5 against Indiana.
So I will lean on my wannabet friends, but I don't. I think they're getting killed tonight. I'm falling back.
Okay, Jason.
I think they're losing by double digits. I mean, I think
they fall back for those.
You have your book of the bone. I'll put my wannabet book of wannabet. -12.5. What do you think about that, Beltway, Ben? Is that too steep for you? I have -12.5.
I think it's a pretty fair number.
-12.5. Book of Wanna Bet.
It's a good book.
All right. Let's get to wild card weekend, Saturday and Sunday action. Matthew Stafford throws for over 266.5 yards. Could be rain in the forecast, Jason.
He will throw for 292 yards.
292. That is a bounce back for those at home, Ken.
Yeah, they get Davante Adams back in this one. I'm going to bounce back as well, Bun.
Let's go to the night game. Packers taking on the Bears. Josh Jacobs goes over 87.5 rushing and receiving. Ken. 87.5 rushing and receiving.
I like that. I'm going to bounce back, Bone.
Okay. Jason?
Say he goes over 87.5 rushing alone, Bone. How about them apples?
87.5 rushing alone. All right. Let's get to the Bills game. What?
VAR, man. VAR.
You love VAR.
You think NFL officiating's bad? Oh, my God.
Josh Allen against the Jags. He scores a rushing touchdown. Jason.
I'm seeing red right now. You said Josh. Who did you say? Josh Johnson.
He's Josh Allen.
Said Josh Allen.
Rushing touchdown?
Yes. Against the Jags.
I think he rushes for over 50 yards. I think he rushes 9 times or more. I'll say he gets the rushing touchdown.
Okay, Ken.
I'll play the game here and I'll fall back. I do like that Jags defense.
Trevor Lawrence, he throws for over 237.5 yards, Ken.
I think he gets a rushing touchdown, but I'll bounce back on the passing yards.
I think they're going to be able to run, Bone. I think it's more like 228 or something like that. Or what did you say? What is the total?
237.5.
Yeah, maybe like 218. Let's go 218.
218. That's a fallback. Let's get to the Eagles taking on the Niners, focusing on the running backs, both of these rushing and receiving yards. Saquon Barkley has over 101.5 rushing and receiving yards, Jason.
I think, again, I'm going to tell you, he does that in rushing alone.
Rushing.
I like that matchup.
Ken?
Yeah, the 49ers defense stinks. Yeah. I'll bounce back on that, Bone. Bounce back on that, Bone.
Yeah. CMC has over 100.
That's what she said, joking there. Yeah. 106.5
rushing and receiving yards, Ken.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Christian McCaffrey over 106.5 rushing and receiving yards.
I think there's going to be a lot of volume in both, so I'll bounce back and say he gets there.
Jason?
Negativo.
As a fallback.
They better hope Trent Williams is 1,000%, and I don't think he's 1,000%. They can't run the ball, and they're not going to run the ball in Philadelphia.
And let's get to Sunday Night Football. That is the Patriots taking on the Chargers. Jason, Drake May throws for over 242.5 yards.
I'll say 212.
That's a fallback, 212. Ken?
I'll agree with Jason. I'll fall back on that.
And Justin Herbert, let's get to his rushing yards.
I like it.
He rushes for over 27.5 yards. 27.5 yards.
I definitely think he will have a rush of 15 yards or more in this game. And I think he's good for 35 or more rushing yards in this game.
35 or more and a rush over 15.
I'll bounce back on that as well. I think there's going to be a lot of volume for him. By the way, we should mention, happy birthday, Lamar Jackson. Turns 29 today.
Nice.
Also, we'll be taking your calls at the bottom of the hour, 410-583-1057. Who would you like to see be the next head coach of the Baltimore Ravens? But coming up next, we have college football playoffs restarting tomorrow. Best bets with our buddy Tim Murray from VSiN next here on The Fan. College football playoffs get started back up again tomorrow. Ole Miss and Miami tomorrow. Oregon and Indiana on Friday. Perfect time to bring on our friend Tim Murray from VSiN. And Tim, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. Before we get looking at these games and your picks, does the college football playoff have a problem with the time off for the teams that have a bye? Only Indiana in 2 years has won coming off the bye.
I think it's a bit overblown right now, because if we look back to last year, we got to remember that Boise State was one of the teams that had a bye. They were a massive underdog. Arizona State had a bye. They were an underdog. Oregon went off as an underdog against Ohio State, who was just a machine a year ago. And then Georgia, I think, actually closed as a very slight dog to Notre Dame. So last year, all four teams who had byes ended up being an underdog. This year, it's a little bit different. Obviously, Ohio State was a favorite. Georgia was a favorite. Yeah, I mean, I think there is a little bit of an advantage to play a game, especially if you've, you know, if you're like Oregon, you got to kind of dust yourself off a little bit against James Madison, or Ole Miss against Tulane. I think it's a little too early to kind of blindly say this is a massive issue moving forward. But look, I think we all are under the assumption that we're going to 16 probably at some point here too. So if this is the push that they need, I mean, heck, it took 1 year for them to change the rules for the byes. And it wouldn't be surprising if this is the artificial push that they need to get to 16 games. And also, you got to think too, right? A team like a program, not that they need the money right now from Mark Cuban and Texas Tech, their billionaire, you know, oil guy down there. But you've got Texas Tech. They missed out on a whole bunch of cash getting a home game. Indiana missed out on a whole bunch of cash having a home game. Georgia. You know, these are programs that I think are having maybe a little FOMO of being like, whoa, that looks like fun. I kind of want to be at home and, you know, have a raucous environment in the middle of December. So I think we're headed towards 16 and, you know, 8 home games on that opening weekend.
Well, let's get to the semis, Tim, and start with tomorrow night. You got Miami going up against Ole Miss, and it's a really interesting matchup because there was some controversy. Would Miami make the playoffs? Would they not? Mm-hmm. Of course, no Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss anymore. Miami, 3.5-point favorites against the Rebels. How do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, no, I think fascinating is kind of a great way to look at it, because Miami, the defense has really stepped up and played exceptionally well these last two rounds. And, well, even going back further, you know, the end of the regular season and that game against Pittsburgh, they were completely dominant against the Pitt Panthers. Shout out to the Nard Dog. Great bowl performance there at the Military Bowl. Good job there, buddy. But I look at this game and I am so intrigued by Trinidad Chambliss versus this defense and Reuben Bain and Mezidor, these two monsters coming off the edge. We saw them just wreak havoc to Julian Sayin. Trinidad Chambliss is a different monster, man. This guy's playing at an elite level right now. He's a special, special talent. I don't really, honestly, guys, have a great feel on the side. I did bet first half under in this game. So right now, DraftKings is 25.5. 24.5s are out there. FanDuel is a super juice 27.5 to the under. I know it's a bit worrisome when you look at an offense like Ole Miss, and let's be honest, a defense in Ole Miss that's not great. Yeah. But I think if I'm Shannon Dawson and Miami, I'm looking at this and saying, all right, they've got a guy at number 6 in Trinidad Chambliss that I don't want on the field. And we saw a couple of times against Ohio State where they did a really good job, Miami did, of playing some keep away, long sustained drives. You look at Ole Miss's rushing attack, or rush defense, I should say, it's not elite. I think you're going to get a healthy dose of Mark Fletcher. I think you're going to get a healthy dose of some short passes, which is what Carson Beck has kind of done so far here in the playoffs. I think the second half, things could get weird, kind of like what we saw in the Sugar Bowl, right? If Ole Miss is down, do they start to stretch the field vertically? If Miami is down, they're going to say, well, we have Malachi Toney. We have some weapons that we can try to get a little more aggressive. My feel is that the first half is kind of a feeling out process where Miami's going to try to keep Ole Miss off the field. They're an up-tempo team. Miami's one of the slower teams. So the bet that I've made in this game, guys, is first half under in this one. I also, and I know, I think player props are not available in Maryland, but The one fun little bet that I put in there was Carson Beck over 5.5 rushing yards. You saw him use the legs a little bit. You're not going to convince or compare him to Lamar Jackson, but he utilized his legs a little bit. And Ole Miss is not a team that's really gotten after the quarterback all that much this year. And Miami has an elite offensive line. I wouldn't be surprised if I saw a couple of scrambles just to move the sticks there and keep things rolling. This is a team that really kind of lived in third and short against Ohio State. I think they're going to want to do that again. So I know you guys can't bet it there in Maryland, but first half under for me in this one. Would lean maybe Ole Miss, or maybe you wait in game and see if you can kind of get a better number on Ole Miss, because you know having a big ticket on Trinidad Chambliss trying to make a comeback could be pretty fun, certainly.
In the other game, we get a rematch. I was all over Oregon when they and Indiana went out there, and that's the last time I've bet against Indiana, and they earned my respect by doing what they did out there in the Pacific Northwest. Obviously, neutral setting here. We've had some injuries. We've had Cignetti getting another contract. Any reason to think that this one goes differently than the first matchup?
Well, I think if you just look at the point spread, you could certainly make a case for Oregon. And stick with me here, because when you get a result like we did in early October, which was Oregon closing as about a touchdown favorite at home, and they lost 30-20. And if you look at some of the advanced numbers, it probably should have been a bigger margin, right? I think SP Plus had a 98% win percentage for Indiana. I think the adjusted win total, or excuse me, the adjusted spread was like 16 points in that game. It was a dominant performance by the Hoosiers out in Autzen. But I like to look at, all right, how much adjustments have we made? So if you remove home field, which 3.5, 4, if you're kind of being fair about it. So, okay, we move it down to Oregon on a neutral back in October was around 3, 3.5. Now it's flipped to 3, 3.5 towards Indiana. So that's a 6-point move. But to your point, JLC, Indiana has proven the odds makers, some sharp bettors wrong all throughout the year. They beat Ohio State. They obliterated Alabama. They go out to Autzen, they win. You know, they beat a tough Iowa team on the road. This team far more tested than what they were a year ago when they went to South Bend and didn't look like they belonged on the field. This team more than belongs, probably the highest power rate. Actually, no, not probably. They are the highest power rated team remaining in college football. But I think you can make a case for Oregon here. Just because of the talent that they have and maybe a bit of an too much of a movement on the line. I have not bet the side in this game yet. I'm waiting to see if this thing bounces back up a little bit. There were some 4.5s out there earlier in the week. You saw a little bit of money come in on Oregon. I will say, talking to some odds makers here in Vegas, it's going to be all Indiana. I mean, the public has jumped on the bandwagon, understandably so. Why wouldn't you? This team looked every bit the part against Alabama, beat Ohio State, right? This team has looked the part. For me, guys, I played under 47.5 in this one. And, you know, Oregon is a team, both these teams are not super fast. Indiana plays pretty slow. I think if you look at pace of play, they're like 63rd out of the 68 Power Four teams. Oregon, this isn't Chip Kelly Oregon anymore, as Ken, you can attest to. They're more methodical. They're more physical. Now, I think the loss of Davison is big. I mean, this is a guy that was kind of a bulldozer, right? He has, 15 touchdowns on the ground this year, had 2 against Texas Tech. And, you know, I'm curious to see how Dante Moore does with pressure in this one, you know, coming his way. He struggled against Texas Tech. Now, Texas Tech is elite defensively. You know, Texas Tech's offense was a disaster, and Oregon proved that. I just think this is kind of a battle, man. I think this is a war. This is Hagler-Hearns just kind of swinging at each other in the middle of the ring. I think these are two elite coaching staffs. Even though Tosh Lupoi is going to Cal and Will Stein's going to Kentucky, they're still going to be there for Oregon, coordinating both the offense and defense respectively. So I think this is an awesome game, a physical game. I think the winner is Indiana, like something like 23-20, 23-21. I think this is just a war down there in Atlanta. Now, you always worry about betting unders on fast tracks, right? Both of these stadiums that they'll be playing in. No weather. It's going to be perfect conditions indoors in Glendale, indoors in Atlanta. But I think this is an under game as well, Oregon and Indiana. You saw early money come in on the under. You've seen a little bit of pushback. So honestly, as we get closer to game time, you might not need a race and take 47.5 under. You might be able to get a 48 here coming up soon. But that's the way I see these games playing out. Probably would lean a little bit towards taking Ken's Ducks plus the points.
Yeah, Tim Murray from Beeson. Let the people know what's going on at Beeson.
Yeah, so you can check me out on Thursday night. We'll be on the air, so a little side screen, if you will. I know ESPN's got like 57 different ways to watch the game. Turn on VSiN. We'll be watching it. We'll be talking live betting. So check that out on SiriusXM channel 158, VSiN.com, YouTube TV, however you want to take us in. So Thursday night, and then we have three preview episodes up on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, we're everywhere. So hope everyone enjoys the games. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's kind of a crazy time right now with the portal and all of that, but we do have some football games, and I think they're going to be two really good football games starting Thursday night.
We need to get you on fixing the calendar.
Oh, yes. Calendar is a massive, massive issue. A lot of issues in the sport, which we could dive into another time. Yes. But for the sake of sanity, we actually have football games to watch on Thursday and Friday.
Thanks, buddy. We'll chat next week.
Thank you.
All right. See you guys.
Coming up next, we want to hear from the people. 410-583-1057. John Harbaugh out. Who would you like to see be the next head coach of the Baltimore Ravens? We'll get your thoughts. 410-583-1057 next. Time to hear from the people. 410-583-1057. John Harbaugh out as head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. Who would you like to see be the next head coach? Let's talk to the people. We'll start with Kevin in Ellicott City. Kevin, you're on the Fan.
What's going on, my man? How are you?
Good, thank you.
So for me, fellas, I think obviously when we drafted Lamar Jackson, we chose to be an offensive-minded team. Older folks like myself love defense, but we're hip to the offense, too. It's cool. I like it. Lamar's my favorite player. What I would ideally like to see with us do with this opportunity is this. I'd like us to get a younger, offensive-minded head coach that maybe wants to create a tandem with the offensive coordinator to create a stronger connection offensively. I'd like us to try to pair those guys up with a good quality defensive coordinator that maybe is up and coming or has already proven himself. And I think it would create balance with this football team. The fan base is a balanced fan base. Some love defense, some love offense. You know how it goes here. You guys report it the best. But that's what I want to see. And maybe like Jesse Minter, or maybe the Kubiak dude, because he's been under Mike McDonald, maybe he sees things similarly. Those would be ideal candidates for me, or Dan Lanning.
Appreciate it. I would love Dan Lanning. Appreciate the call. Yeah. And Jason, as we articulated earlier, we both are kind of hesitant about Minter for different
reasons.
There's
red flags here.
Yes.
I think he'll be, I mean, he has every right to be getting all the attention he's getting. He's going to have a bunch of interviews with pretty much everybody. I have red flags about the fit here because it's a little too convenient. It's a little too cookie cutter for me, for what the GM will want. It will give the GM, at a time when he needs checks and balances, it's going to give him even more power.
I just think when you make a move of this magnitude, moving on from a head coach that's been here for 18 years, do you really want more of the same?
Well, he's a horrible guy.
And look, Minter, like you said, it could be extremely successful wherever he lands this offseason or next or whenever. But I just think if you're the Ravens, you probably want to shake it up a bit. You already did the hard part in letting go of John Harbaugh.
410-583-1057. Let's go to Ed and Towson. Ed, you're on the Fan.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Hey.
I think that what you got to look at is whoever rolls in the door. And you talk about Cignetti. I've known of Cignetti. I got a relative that played at Elon, so I know him since Elon. And what you got to understand is when that cat is, he's a weird duck.
Yeah.
He's a different dude. And at the end of the day, the room is going to have to be his. Like Belichick. And I'm not comparing him to these guys, but he has to have that kind of control.
Yes.
Like, you know, is it going to be his team or, now listen, J-Lock, and nobody get mad, is it going to be his team or are you going to be Mrs. Lamar Jackson? And you know what I'm talking about with that. Like, okay, I want to get Jair Alexander, and I'm Signetic. No, we don't need him. No. But you want Lamar in all the rooms, the offensive rooms and things like that. But at the end of the day, when we come out of the room, it's my deal, and I have the ability to critique any aspect of this team. That's what a Signetti is, and that's what Dan Lanning is. Those are SEC guys originally. So you must understand, is the guy going to have total control, or is, you know, sunglasses at night going to mess with his thing?
He's not going to want that model. Yeah, that's why the Saban and the Belichick thing be over his dead body. Now, look, it's going to be Bisciotti's call. But Bisciotti to this point, and maybe everything's up for discussion other than, I guess, the GM, maybe he's not as into separation of church and state as he used to be. Maybe he's more willing to entertain a coach having closer to final say or the ability to settle some degree arguments and, you know, it not go tied to the personnel department or whatever. Maybe, again, we don't know because we don't ever hear from him.
I would think if he was going to go that route, then he would have let go of Eric. I can't imagine he's going to shake it up.
Well, he might not know until this process starts to unfold. Yeah. Certain people tell him, well, hey, I really like everything about your job, except for,
but
have you looked at your drafts lately?
But my point is...
Now, Jesse Minter's not going to say that.
No,
my point
not.
Is, by firing John Harbaugh, he's not going to be like, oh, well, I guess I should figure out who's my next... I'm sure he has names in mind. And if he was thinking, hey, let's try to woo Bill Belichick from Carolina, like, he'd have to know that.
I do find it interesting. Like, the first go around with Steve, when he fired Billick, he wanted Jason Garrett, that famously. And then Garrett didn't happen, and we got 18
And Garrett
years.
Was the it guy, the hot guy.
Yes.
And Harbs was an unknown.
Yes. Joe's in Woodbury. Joe, you're on the fan.
Thank you guys for just pointing that out because, you know, Bisciotti owns staff and companies. I worked for him at OnSite and Earl Tech, and I was just kidding with the guy who answered my phone. I said, I wonder if he's going to use Indeed to get his next coach. But anyway.
Those are good commercials, though.
Yeah,
huh? That one thumps, man.
Yeah. But anyway, I like to talk about this now. Harbs came here in 08. The culture was already here. He fell into, I'm going to say, he just fell into a hot tub full of everything.
Yeah.
But the next coach is coming in with a different, you know, everything's different. He doesn't have a culture here anymore. So we need a coach that's going to set a culture. We need a coach that's going to be a disciplinary. We need a coach that's going to help these guys mentally, not just physically, and all the people he bring in. So I'm saying that y'all just said it. He already got somebody in mind before he fired Harbaugh. And that's all I worried about him having is who he wants in mind. And he's going to get somebody he wants no matter who we say. So I just want him to make the right pick. And being he's a staffing person, we ought to be all right. You guys have a blessed, wonderful day.
I have to issue a correction. It's not the Indeed commercials. It's
ZipRecruiter.
It's ZipRecruiter. Yes. Yeah, it just came in my head. I'm like, wait a minute, I don't think it's Indeed. Yeah. So I was trying to sing the song in my head. It's ZipRecruiter.
But also,
that slaps.
And I love Joe, but I do want to push back and say, like, Billick lost the locker room, and when John came here, he was more of that drill sergeant and clashed with
and
the veterans.
Yes.
He did kind of change the culture.
Not everybody has to practice Wednesday. Yeah. Not everybody has to go balls out all the time. Yeah.
And he adapted from then over the past 18 years, but when he came here, it was different than Billick.
Let's go grab Jeff in Baltimore. Jeff, you're on the fan.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge proponent of replacing Harbaugh.
This call will be recorded.
I understood it. I think I would have let him run it through one more time, being told you got to be hands-on, you haven't been hands-on, and we need a new coordinator defensively. As far as new coach, I like Signetti. I don't know why you have all this angst about Minter, because McDonald was a Harbaugh tree guy, and he's turned out to be great, and he was in Baltimore.
But under that scenario,
McDonald's with John Schneider, who's got the control there. Yeah. And that was John Schneider's hire, and that's fine. John Schneider's won a Super Bowl as a GM. Eric DaCosta has not won anything as a GM.
And McDonald, if he would have, like, under the scenario that was never going to happen, but John Harbaugh steps aside after being the one seed going to the AFC Championship game, there I have less of a problem with going to a successor in that case because John Harbaugh is leaving on good terms, and you want to stick it out. Now you've just fired a guy. I don't want to replace him with a guy from the same tree because you fired that tree. That's my problem there. That guy's going to listen back to that call. He was recording it. Yeah, it was nice. Coming up next, we've talked a lot about the Harbaugh firing. What does Aaron Schatz think of it? Of course, the inventor of DVOA will get his thoughts on just how bad this Ravens team was as well. Aaron Schatz joins us next here on The Fan.